Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What the heck is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Kinda Funny XCast, your home for all things Xbox here at Kinda Funny. Of course, I'm one of your hosts, Snowbike Mike, and today you'll notice both of my gaming dads are absent from the podcast, but I have replaced them with one of my gaming heroes.
Stepdad.
The stepdad. I like that. I had Jeff Grubb, my gaming daddy, Ryan McCaffrey.
Uncle, gaming uncle?
The gaming uncle feels right there. Of course, IGN's own Podcast Unlocked host, one of my gaming heroes, Ryan McCaffrey, on the show. Ryan, what's up, man?
Good to have, good to be here. No, yeah. You're having me. Good for me to be here. I love, man, that the Halo theme music, which you must be like riding right on the edge of getting sued with that,
touched,
like
yeah.
Right there. But it fires me up every time.
Oh, thanks, Ryan. Yeah, shout out to Tim and the team for creating, of course, the incredible set and awesome
great music
soundtrack for the intro. I mean, we've really gone above and beyond for our Xbox product, is right. I'm glad that you like that, because I noticed on your side, we get to give each other compliments now.
Let's
since
do it.
Two hosts of Xbox shows. You got Steve Downs as the open. What was that like? Do you love hearing that? Have you switched it up before? What do you like about your intro?
The audience loves it. I love it. That actually came about during COVID, when everybody was just like, voice actors couldn't work by and large, and Steve went on Cameo,
okay,
which like seems like Cameo had a moment that's over now,
yeah,
which is a shame, because like I like Cameo. He was doing a thing where it was however much money to get him to record a greeting for you, but it was all going to, I think it was, might be maybe a military veteran charity, some sort of charitable thing where he wasn't keeping. I mean, I would have been happy to pay him anyway. But I was like, oh, this is perfect. I'll just ask him to record an intro to Unlocked, which I think now like is they've like caught on, and that they like they don't do that anymore, because it is kind of cheating a little bit.
Okay, like, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so he just did that on Cameo. I had him do one for my Tesla podcast as
Sweet.
Well.
Sweet.
Where
yeah.
he like he makes like a Warthog reference to the Cybertruck, and
nice.
Because again, it was all for charity. Why not? And so, yeah, kicking it off with Steve Downs, is that gets me going every time, too.
I like that. How many iterations of your intro have you had over the years, Ryan? Because you've been in the game for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
some would say too long.
You and Greg Miller, my gaming uncles, my heroes, right? I mean, how many intros have you done? And especially, not only the music and the video package, but, like, your intro when you welcome everyone. Because I've seen, you're pretty consistent with yours. You got the episode number.
Yeah, I'm a routine-oriented guy, I guess. But I'm very predictable.
Have you played with it before? What have you done?
I don't know. I mean, we've had little, like, listener-submitted musical jingles to open with, because the Unlocked has kind of gone back and forth between being like an audio first podcast and a video first podcast. We're trying to do both these days, just meet the audience wherever they are. But yeah, it probably could use some freshening up. We've been rocking the Steve Downs intro for a while, but it's one of those things where I'm very lucky to do what I do at IGN, but I've got like a million things to do every week, and so sadly, like, find new intro for Unlocked ends up pretty far down the priority list. But as long as people are happy, that's all that matters.
I know I'm always happy each and every week I get a new Unlocked. And we've been having a lot of guests recently. Of course, Destin is always on. Shout out to Stella for joining the crew now. It's been really great. Miranda, always an incredible voice. But you've been showcasing a lot of guests, which I really appreciate you doing.
Yeah, that's been one of the best things to come out of the otherwise awful pandemic situation, is this sort of embracing of remote stuff.
Yes.
You know, you remote Paris in all the time here. And that's something we literally would never do that. We didn't even have the tech infrastructure because it was just a thing that nobody really thought about, right? Like, oh, well, if they come to town, you know, developer or whatever, sure, we'll have them in. But like Zoom existed, but we never kind of thought that far through it.
Yeah, and I remember back in 2018 when I was there, like one of the early ideas I remember me and Alexio had was like we would put a TV on set for people to be coming in.
Yeah, it's like there were those initial little experiments, but yeah, it's been nice that the remoteness of the pandemic sort of forced us to rethink that stuff. And now I can have anybody on from no matter where they live, you know, what they're up to, and it's just honestly, for me, it's made Unlocked better because we've gotten so many different voices and perspectives that we just weren't otherwise featuring, we weren't otherwise sharing with our audience. So yeah, that's been I think Unlocked is in that regard certainly better than ever.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, it is better than ever. It's nice to have new voices coming in. I'm lucky to have you this week. We had Jeff Grubb last week. Of course, Phil Spencer, we'll talk about that interview, but you're so
a little
right.
Humble brag right there.
Hey, I got one on you, Ryan. I got one.
No, you guys did a great job.
I
was telling you before we got on. There is a line that you have to walk that I know the audience doesn't necessarily care, nor should they care about. But you know, when you have somebody like he's the CEO of the head of Xbox, right? Since Satya Nadella is the CEO, but he's the head of a multi-billion-dollar arm of a trillion-dollar corporation. And again, when you have a guy like that in, it's a rare opportunity. I don't think I've had him on for a couple of years now. It's been a bit. But and then when you do, you know, it's you got to treat him respectfully. Because they're a guest, you treat any guest with respect. But you also, you know, it so happened you caught him in the middle of this Redfall nightmare for them. But you also have to do right, you have to be respectful to your guests, but you also have to do right by your audience and ask these questions that deserve to be asked. And I thought you guys honestly did a really good job of walking that line. It's for those of you who listen, who watch, you know, you may not think about it, and that's okay, but I know from experience, it's a really hard line to walk. And I do applaud you guys. You did a great job. Because that's, you know, it turns into suddenly this amazing opportunity for you, where it's like, holy shit, this could kind of put, you know, this could really up our, you know, notoriety, for better or for worse, depending on how this goes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're too soft with him, you let him off the hook, then it's like, oh, those kind of funny guys are just Microsoft kiss asses. Or if you're too hard on him, then it's like, you know, if your audience might pick up on that, like, oh, man, because, you know, Xbox gamers like Phil. He is a likable human being. I know from just spending time with him, not with microphones in front of our faces, he is a nice human being. I'm sure you picked that up, too. But, you know, you can't be, you got to ask him the tough questions because it's, we're all customers of this again, this multi-billion dollar arm of a corporation that he runs. And, you know, he needed to answer for what was going on. And so, yeah, I was really, to embrace my temporary status as gaming uncle here, I was really proud of you guys.
Thanks.
For that. Cause it's you and Gary and Paris did a great job on it.
Thanks, Ryan. I really appreciate that. It means a lot coming from you for me to be in the building, and I know they'll appreciate that when they listen in and hear that. But, yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the Phil interview, and, of course, I want to talk all things Xbox with you, but just in a moment because, of course, this is the Kinda Funny XCast. We post each and every Thursday at 6 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames, RoosterTeeth.com, and, of course, on podcast services around the globe. Don't forget we are now Epic Games partners, which means if you are upgrading your look in Rocket League, buying that new season pass in Fortnite, or buying anything off the Epic Games store, please use our Epic creator code KindaFunny at checkout to help support the team in a brand new way. And talking about support, we always like to thank those who support us here at Kinda Funny via Patreon, whether you're backing us just enough to watch the show live, or if you are one of our Patreon producers like Delaney Twinning, thank you so much for supporting us. This week, the Kinda Funny XCast is sponsored by Rocket Money and RTX, but we'll tell you all about that in just a little bit. Ryan, let's talk about the Phil Spencer interview. Of course, everyone spoke about it 2 weeks ago. They've all had their different takes.
We played a clip of it on Unlocked. That's how you got some serious promotion on IGN. Again, well-earned, well-deserved.
Thanks, Ryan. But like you said, he was open. He was honest. He had taken one on the chin with that team from Redfall and, of course, the CMA blocking that Activision Blizzard King acquisition.
Yep.
What were some of your thoughts coming out of that initially when you heard, of course, his openness of, you know, Xbox's new path and their vision of it's not just going to take great games?
Well, I did a whole show on it after. But yeah, it's I did not agree. The 360, getting great games is exactly what pulled people from the PS2 over to the 360. And his point about digital ecosystems and people being kind of entrenched in those ecosystems because they've spent money there, they have a virtual, you know, their friends list there, it's, that point's well taken. But for me, as a gamer, somebody that's been playing games forever, and Phil's a gamer too, I'm not trying to say, like, I'm a gamer and he's not, but from my point of view, we do have these digital ecosystems that we're entrenched in, but it takes longer to, you know, he was talking about how there's no more generational reset where you can just like, oh, new, fresh start, everybody's at zero, we can grab some market share now if we do the right stuff. Like, yeah, it's not like it was 2-3 generations ago, but you make enough of those 11 out of 10 games that we hope Starfield is going to be, and the probably the first of many, then in time, like, okay, yeah, when PlayStation 6 and Xbox Series Y come around, well, then you're going to get that person, you're going to get that gamer to go, yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of friends and games that I've bought digitally on PlayStation, but man, you know, the Xbox has been killing it. I've been spending more of my time over there. It's not to say you're going to switch, but maybe you're going to buy the next Xbox first and pick up your PlayStation 6 later, and you're going to sort of move over to Xbox as your primary. You're going to spend more money there. It's not an all or nothing proposition anymore. Yeah. I think for a lot of people, I mean, hey, these are expensive consoles, so I don't mean to, I'm sitting here from a position of great privilege where I get to own these for my job. So I know that they're not cheap and that some people do have those decisions to make. But I disagreed with Phil on the, you know, the this sort of, well, we're in third place mentality. It's like that wasn't the attitude that had you basically winning North America in the 360 generation.
Yeah, that was a really interesting attitude. And of course, I know we got cranky Phil during that interview. And maybe a week later, he's feeling a little bit different. But yeah, there was a different kind of defeatist attitude there. And no, it's just not enough. And I think a lot of the fans said, no, that is what it needs to take right now. And as we look forward to the rest of the year, Ryan, right? First party lineup, right? I think we talk about Game Pass and third party. Third party's bringing it always. They got a lot of great games. Game Pass, been very thankful for a lot of great third party deals as well. But when we look at the first party lineup, year one of the new console, people say it was pretty good. Year two, not as good. Year three here, how are you feeling at the halfway point? And when we look forward, right, you have Age 4 on console, right? You have Forza still undated, and you have Starfield. Is that enough, Ryan, or do you need more?
Well, we're at the point where it's just the timing of Redfall being a disaster. I don't think that's being hyperbolic. Redfall was a disaster. And I don't think the timing could have been worse. Because if Redfall had come in the middle of that incredible run in the second half of 2021, the Forza Horizon 5, the Halo Infinite, the Psychonauts 2, and yes, I recognize Psychonauts 2 by virtue of a previous arrangement was a multi-platform game, but it was a Microsoft published game. If Redfall had landed in there, I don't think it would have been nearly, it would have been a big disappointment. We would have done shows about it. It's not that we would have ignored it and be like, ah, whatever. But the fact that we came off one of the worst years of Xbox in a long time in 2022, and not because it was bad, just because there weren't a lot of exclusives, particularly those AAA blockbuster exclusives. So it was really just the timing of it that we'd been waiting and waiting and waiting. And yes, Hi-Fi Rush, shout out, awesome. But there is Hi-Fi Rush was, even if it had been announced ahead of time, it was awesome that they did it as this surprise shadow drop, pulled it off. That was awesome. But even if they had announced it ahead of time, that was never going to be in the Redfall category in terms of it wasn't a AAA production. It was 20, 30 people. It was a smaller passion project, which, again, those have a ton of value, but it's just a different level when you're talking about the $50+ million AAA blockbusters, the tent poles of your first party lineup. And so that's where the Redfall situation was really tough. And now for the second half of the, so basically we've had one awesome smaller surprise in Hi-Fi Rush. Minecraft Legends, by all accounts, very good. Not a game that I think the people watching this show, the people watching my show, the core gamer, that's not
agreed.
A game that they're like pre-ordering and, you know, going to a midnight launch for, if those were a thing anymore, which it was for Zelda, but, you know, generally speaking, we're not doing those. But so now that leaves us, okay, so basically we, you know, one small win. Again, not trying to minimize Hi-Fi Rush, but all right, one smaller scale win, one big disaster, and one solid game that doesn't move the needle for the core gamer.
Yeah, yeah.
So we head into the second half. I think what Xbox gamers have been looking for is momentum, and that's what Redfall ruined.
Yeah, yeah.
It ruined the momentum that Hi-Fi Rush started. If Redfall had been even very good, not even great, like we wanted it to be great, but even if it was only very good, could have kept that momentum going and towards Starfield in September and then towards Forza Motorsport, which we've been waiting a long time for Forza, and I'm super pumped for that for a couple reasons. One, Forza has one of the best track records in all of gaming. You think about it, there have been 7 motorsports. This will be the 8th.
Yes.
And there have been 5 Horizons. None of them, not only have none of them missed, they've all, every single one of them, been a 9 out of 10 or higher. Do you disagree with me?
No. Right? I think they make a great product
over
there.
Truth here.
Both teams, yeah.
So, yeah, Playground and Turn 10, I mean, it's just, the consistency is insane. So you're talking about 12 games, all of a 9 or higher caliber. So there's every reason to be excited for that. Plus the fact that they have taken so long that they have rebuilt this thing technologically for the Series X. We are leaving the Xbox One behind. So I'm excited to see how that looks. I mean, we've seen a little how it looks, how it plays, how it performs. That's just going to be great. So I do think that's going to drop this fall, unless they run into some roadblock, and maybe that's why they haven't given us a release date yet. And if they end up needing to take more time, fine. Of course, nobody wants the rush thing, especially, you know, I know the pressure's got to be on for all the teams now with sort of the general gamer sentiment, Xbox community sentiment. But and then you asked specifically first party, and this is a really long-winded answer. You should cut me off anytime.
Oh, no, keep going. I love hearing it. I love talking.
There's two wild cards this fall, and I say wild cards not so much for the quality purpose. I'm pretty confident in their quality. I mean, certainly in one of them. The other one's a little bit of an unknown, but these are third parties, but they're Xbox exclusives. So we've got Stalker 2, Part of Chernobyl, which, again, I think a lot of people have kind of forgotten about, and understandably so. That team, Ukrainian development team, they've been fighting off a literal war at their doorstep. Something that I don't know if any video game development team has really faced before. I mean, it's in extraordinary circumstances. And so the last update we got from that team, well, technically we had a trailer on IGN on literally like December 30th, which was a great trailer, did millions of views. There's still interest in that game. But the last real update we got from them was the Xbox Extended Showcase from a couple days after the main showcase last June, when there was that just incredibly moving.
Yes, remember that
Sort of dev diary explaining how like the how the war, this invasion by Russia has affected their team, and that their development team members who have literally taken up arms to defend their country. I can't remember if that was before or after they tragically had one of their
I remember
team
that as well. Yes,
killed in combat. So all they had given us was 2023 for Stalker 2. And I don't think you'll find a single soul in the Xbox community that will be the slightest bit upset if that game ends up not making 2023.
True.
Because these are, you know, it's a literal life and death situation. Also in that same situation are the Ukrainian developers of Replaced, which is Paris's
big game right there.
Yeah, it's his hot indie, and I don't blame him. I mean, that jumped out at me. It jumped out at a lot of us when it was first shown about, what, 2 years ago maybe? So if either or both of those land this fall as well, that makes the Xbox fall look a heck of a lot nicer. Again, if they don't, Nobody's gonna be upset. We'll get them when we get them, and hopefully they're gonna be fantastic. And all those developers can and their families can remain safe. But yeah, it's an interesting fall. I guess the worst case scenario is we don't get Stalker 2, we don't get Replaced, and Forza needs more time, and Starfield is it.
Yeah,
that's the worst case scenario. Now of course we're hoping that Starfield is going to be that 11 out of 10. I want nothing more. I mean, and you have every reason to be excited for that possibility. You have Todd Howard and a veteran team at Bethesda Game Studios who've all worked together for 20-plus years. These guys made Fallout 4, they made Skyrim, they made Oblivion, they made Fallout 3. I mean, their track record is incredible. So you got a new IP from them, exclusive to the Xbox on next-gen only platform. There's a lot to be hyped for there. But that's the worst case scenario, is that, at least in terms of output,
yeah,
is that Starfield's really all we get. But the best case scenario is that we get all that stuff and it's one heck of a fall.
You make it sound like a packed fall is right. A better second half than I would expect.
Yeah.
You add, of course, those two third-party partnerships in there with those exclusives, right? And you look down the list, that starts to really pack in the fall that I think the Xbox gamers need, like
yes.
You said, right? That momentum
yeah.
was there. We've been promised so long from Matt Booty and the team, one big exclusive every quarter of the mm-hmm. year. That's our goal, right? And you thought that Redfall was going to be that domino. Really, Hi-Fi Rush could have been that domino if Redfall didn't miss, right? Like,
yeah.
There's your start. Hey, we're looking at a pretty solid year. And it just seems like, oh, we've missed the domino line now. We need to restack,
yeah, start
which
over.
Is a problem. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, you talk about momentum, and then we look ahead to, I know there's an outside optimism, I think, that Hellblade 2 could land this fall.
Yeah.
I'm not pinning any hopes on that. I mean, the showcase will really tell us one
that's
way or the other, right?
Date, right, Ryan?
If it's coming out this fall, we're going to get a release date at the showcase. That's
okay.
Take that to the bank. Like
that.
If it's out this fall, we will absolutely get a date at the showcase. And if it's not out this fall, it probably will still be at the showcase, and maybe they'll give a window, like a, you know, winter 24 or spring mm-hmm. 24. Or, we'll see. But you know, if Starfield can be that game, the game that it now basically has to be.
Yes, yeah.
That has no choice but to be that game. Then yeah, I mean, Forza, the Vegas odds on that being excellent are extraordinarily good for all the reasons that I rambled on about 5 minutes ago. So Starfield could really get that momentum going. Starfield into Forza, into Stalker whenever it drops. I know not a first party game, but an exclusive, which is what Xbox gamers have been missing. Into Replaced, hopefully, and then into Hellblade 2, and then we kind of see where 24 takes us, whether that's Gears 6,
ooh.
Avowed.
Yep.
You know, those seem to be, what's going on? Is Everwild still kind of, is that still way the heck out there, or was that coming up next year? So, yeah, we're set up well for the momentum, but I think you put it well, of having to just Redfall just ruined that domino fall of like, all right, we got to stack everything up and start over here.
You know, Ryan, that's a great way of looking at the second half of the year. And you brought up so many points. I actually am interested. I want to talk Forza with you for just a moment.
Let's do it.
Right, because, of course, we're coming off of Rally Adventure. Right, we just had that DLC. Not, in my personal opinion, as strong as the first Hot Wheels DLC, but it was good quality. If you were into rally racing, if you were interested at all, that team nailed it, right? I think people want this big, bombastic Lego racer DLC out of the team. But this one was a solid DLC if you wanted to jump into
it. Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, it fills a gap where, you know, the like Colin McRae Racing is MIA, you know, Codemasters, now owned by EA, is not really making a rally game anymore, or at least they haven't in a while. You go back in your Xbox history. DICE made Rally Sport Challenge, beloved game back in the day. That was many battlefields ago. But yeah, it's Playgrounds never miss. The word I always talk about them on Unlocked, and I tweet a lot, is if you see me tweet about Playground, the word Wizards is often in that sentence or in that tweet, because the team is, it's unbelievable what they have achieved over the last, well, let's see. Yeah, I guess about 10 years now. It's wild.
Really, really talented. And that's where I want to go, of course, with Playground. I believe in 2021, you and your team at IGN gave Forza Horizon 5 Game of the Year. One of the only outlets that I saw go out there and give a racing game the Game of the Year award.
I could not have been happier
than that. Thought that was so interesting.
If I remember correctly, so we are blessed at IGN to have one of our editors who's in our Australian office in Sydney. His name's Luke Riley. This guy, I would put him in media, certainly, I would put him up against anybody in terms of passion for and knowledge of the racing game genre. Luke Riley is the guy when it comes to racing games. I mean, we throw every racing game at him, and he just loves it. He loves the genre. And if I remember correctly, he gave Forza Horizon 4 a 10. And it was it was in the discussions, and it's that thing where racing games have this, as you know, this kind of, I'm forgetting the right word for it, but almost like there's like a prejudice against them in terms of, oh, it's just a racing game.
Yes, yes.
Well, try it. And through Game Pass, the more and more people have actually, I think Forza Horizon is one of Game Pass's biggest success stories, in that it went from this, it's always been a 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 series, and as you know, Horizon is so approachable, because Forza Motorsport is a racing game. Forza Horizon, in my opinion, is a driving game, and there is a difference. I think Horizon is so much more approachable. It can be a pretty hardcore racing game if you want it to be, but it can also be a really chill, just like social game where you can just drive around in cool cars in a cool, you know, fictionalized version of a real place, smashing billboards and doing other little activities. And yeah, with Game Pass, I remember Microsoft would put out press releases that, oh, you know, Horizon 4 is up to whatever it was, you know, 10 million players or something, just by virtue of people having access to it through Game Pass. And that series seemed to really build some momentum. And then when 5 came around and the Wizards at Playground hit it out of the park again, 10 out of 10 video game, well-deserved from IGN and other outlets, we were finally able to get everybody in the office, even including people that don't normally play car games, to try it, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, yeah, this is great. And it was so, I felt so good for Playground that we did vote as we did and give them the Game of the Year, because it was so deserving, and it was able to overcome that it's just a racing game kind of prejudice.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty special. And like you said, that was a great product. That was a game that was so approachable to so many. It is out of the, hey, you're on the track and you got to be perfect. You can smash into trees. You can drive through the river. It doesn't matter. Have fun. And that's a game, really benefited from Game Pass, and a just really well-done game where everyone can jump in. It was cool to see them get the flowers from you and your team. I thought that was really dope. And so where I want to go with this one is, now we look at the year after. We look at this year. Xbox Game of the Year. These big titles. Can Xbox produce another Game of the Year? Is Starfield that when you look at Tears of the Kingdom, Diablo 4, Star Wars, right? Like, there's a bunch of bangers this year. Does Xbox have the juice to give you a Game of the Year this year, you think?
There's no doubt. I mean, again, for everything I was just talking about with, you look at the pedigree of Bethesda Game Studios and you look at Todd Howard's resume, you look at the fact that 8 years has gone into this game. Yeah, I know there's, you know, they did some Fallout 4 DLC, but for all intents and purposes, it's 8 years between Fallout 4 and Starfield. So yeah, it absolutely can be that. If Starfield had been able to stick its original date of 11/11/22, it's like in sports when somebody has a great season and wins the MVP, well, maybe they're just other guys got hurt or, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, you win MVP this year, but in other years, you know, there are just other guys that have, you know, guys that have great years and you have a great year, but like, yeah, it's maybe not quite enough. And if Starfield had been able to come out and be finished and polished and as awesome as we want it to be last year, it sure would have had a great chance because it would have been a very limited field. And again, I'm not trying to knock Starfield. It's just, yeah. But that was last year was such a down year overall in gaming, particularly on Xbox. But you know, like you said, this year it's tough competition in 2023. Timing is everything, and you know, Tears of the Kingdom is obviously going to be the front runner at this stage. But I mean, it's Jedi Survivor is on my short list.
Yep.
For Game of the Year. I mean, I hope Diablo 4 is going to get there based on having played Act 1 a couple times in the
press. A lot of beta gameplay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. If Act 2, you know, if the rest of the game stands up to Act 1, Diablo 4 is going to be in that mix for me, at least, and probably a lot of other people. And yeah, we'll see. But, you know, Final Fantasy 16 coming for Sony, you know, via Square. There's a lot of competition this year on all
platforms. Spider-Man as well.
Spider-Man, yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting because like you talk about the pressure now, especially after Redfall, but you line up all these games and they go, man, Starfield, you have an even more pressure just to be relevant in the year, right? Like, I know Bethesda carries a lot of weight, but man, oh man, we've had some incredible games and I need this to be a great game.
This is really unfair to say. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, knock anybody at Bethesda or anything, but if you're Microsoft, if you could have had a crystal ball, of course, you know, this is the dumbest fictional hypothetical scenario that you could poke a million holes in. But for all these reasons we're talking about, you probably could never get Phil Spencer to admit it. But I would imagine if he could like find a genie in a lamp and make a wish, he might wish to switch. Have Elder Scrolls 6 and Starfield switch places so that Elder Scrolls 6 was the exclusive coming out this fall. Ooh. And then Starfield is the new IP that they're going to do next because, like, would you agree, Mike, that of every, like, the entire Xbox portfolio now, including Halo, including anything, absolutely any studio they've acquired, everything they have, that Elder Scrolls is now the biggest thing in their portfolio, bigger than Halo.
The biggest and the baddest, Ryan. I'm not afraid to say that at all, right? Coming off of what we've done with Morrowind, Oblivion,
yeah.
Skyrim, when you think of what Todd is doing with Elder Scrolls, oh yeah, that's the biggest
sales
and the
potential bad. Of, you know, and again, I gave Halo Infinite's campaign a 9.
Oh, love
that. You know, IGN very much liked Halo and loved Halo Infinite, and I still do. But you know, you look at what Elder Scrolls has been,
mm-hmm.
and with how long of a wait it's been since Skyrim, because the team did Fallout 4, and as it turns out, now they're, you know, doing Starfield in between. I mean, Skyrim is a game that sold. We looked this up on it, so I have this relatively. This is going to be ballpark correct. It's 30-something million copies of Skyrim have been sold, and yeah, make the jokes about on your toaster,
uh-huh.
and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But if Skyrim, if Elder Scrolls 6 were arriving in September and not Starfield, Microsoft would be absolutely in a position to absolutely elbow out and go toe to toe with all these other, you know, with Tears of the Kingdom, with Spider-Man 2, with all, you know, Starfield. I'm psyched for it. I love that Todd Howard and that team are making us a new game in a new universe, but just from a sheer like brand power perspective, of course, a new IP starts from zero. Elder Scrolls has been going for 25 plus years. It has built up over the course of 5 mainline games, this incredible brand power. And if Microsoft were dropping that exclusively this fall, you know, that's a juggernaut that can, again, can look directly eye to eye with any of these other games this year. Starfield, just by virtue of being a new thing that people don't know what it is yet.
True.
Don't know that they love it. It will have a more of an uphill battle in terms of, you know, getting that attention against, you know, standing out in the crowd against all those other games. Because, you know, Zelda, Spider-Man, Diablo, you know, all this stuff is, these are not just some of the biggest IPs and franchises in the world. They've all been going for like 20 plus years. Starfield has been going for 0 years.
Yes, exactly.
So it doesn't ultimately change what kind of game Starfield is going to be, but it does. There is a perception. There is that sort of like brand muscle that is a real thing that, like, I mean, I'm not on Bethesda's marketing team, but that's something they have to wrestle with of like, we got to figure out how to, you know, poke our head above the crowd here when you've got all these actual titans that are standing there in the room.
Really well said, Ryan. Yeah, it's so incredible to think about that brand and that recognition, right? But then also starting from zero with Starfield, right? You walk around the streets, hey, you know what Starfield is? Very low, as opposed to, hey, you know what Elder Scrolls is? Remember Skyrim? Yeah, yeah. People are gonna go
and
wild.
And again, I don't want to sound hypocritical, because like we as Xbox fans, we've been asking for new exclusive games for years. So I'm not trying to spit in the face of Starfield at all. I'm just saying, to your point about the, can Starfield be like the game of the year this year? It absolutely can, but the reality of life and the marketplace is, even if it is an 11 out of 10, it's gotta contend with the Zeldas and with the Star Wars and the Spider-Men of the world.
Big names, that's right. Interesting, we talked about Skyrim, because that was about a decade ago. And I want to talk about
more.
A decade
it's
ago.
2011.
That's
12 years.
I want to talk about a decade ago with you, because in the news recently has been the Xbox One reveal. And of course, I know you know this was coming.
Do we have to talk about it?
We got to talk about it with you.
Reliving past trauma.
We're going to relive.
Is this why you invite? Is this how you treat your guests?
We're going to relive those past traumas right after a word from our sponsors.
Shout out to RTX for sponsoring this episode. If you're looking to spend an amazing summer weekend in Austin, Texas, the RTX convention is the perfect excuse. RTX is a gaming, comedy, animation, and podcast festival that Rooster Teeth is throwing in Austin, Texas at the Convention Center from July 7th through 9th. And rumor has it, a couple kind of funny people whose names may or may not rhyme with Mo Trike Like and Loey Moel are planning to head down to party as well. RTX has so much to offer over the 3 days, with activities like a free paranormal-themed escape room, achievement hunter, mini golf, VTubing with Ruby characters, and over a dozen live shows with guests like Dungeons & Daddies and Therapy Gecko. There are also evening events each night, from parties to a comedy showcase, an evening rave, and everything in between that can be found in Austin. Buying Ultra and Platinum badges will get you the highest perks, but there's also a solid deal right now where people that purchase weekend and daily badges get another badge for 50% off. Go to rtxaustin.com to select badges and to find additional information. Don't miss out on one of the biggest parties in Austin this summer. Shout out to Rocket Money for sponsoring this episode. We all love gobbling up content, and we have an understanding of what subscriptions we use, or do we? Do you know how much your subscriptions really cost? Most Americans think that they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when the actual total is closer to $200+. You could be wasting hundreds of dollars each and every month on subscriptions that you don't even know about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors spending and it helps you lower your bills all in one place. Rocket Money has saved some of us here at Kind of Funny a ton of money, and it can help you too. Rocket Money also helps you manage all your finance in one place and automatically can help you categorize your expenses so you can easily track your budget in real time. So stop throwing your money away. You can cancel unwanted subscriptions and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. That's rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny. rocketmoney.com/kindoffunny.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Yeah, Ryan, it was so interesting because I told all my friends, I was like, oh, man, McCaffrey's coming. It's a big deal. And they're like, Mike, that's so dope. Like, this is incredible. He's got such a history. You got to ask him about some of the old school days or ask him about TV, sports, entertainment, TV, and what it was like in that war room of IGN. Because, of course, it's funny. Kebabs writes in and says, man, that Xbox One reveal is what got me really in to video games media with IGN and Unlocked and beyond.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I thought about it and it's like, that's when I became an enthusiast and really listened to your show all the time, listened to Greg and followed IGN was this big E3 summer blowout, of course, of the new console and then into E3 3 weeks later. So what was it like in the room, of course, of a new console coming off of the 360 for you as an Xbox guy and then having that messaging during that briefing?
Well, so I wasn't there for the actual, again, we're shooting this on May 23rd. It's like we're within a day or two of the actual 10-year anniversary of the unveiling of it, which took place up at Redmond, up at Microsoft campus. I was not there for that. I forget why. I think maybe I had to host some stuff, like our live show back at IGN HQ. We sent Mitch Dyer, who was my number two on our Xbox team, out to actually be there. But I just remember them feeling like they'd lost the plot. It was, and you know, whoever gets the original credit for the TV montage that like blew up on YouTube.
Yeah,
I mean that really kind of said it all at the time. And what. You know, of course, hindsight's 2020, but we kind of didn't even need the hindsight. Like everybody could pretty well see it in the moment that Microsoft was trying to like the big reason the 360 worked is because they knew they needed to aggressively court core gamers with good hardware, developer-friendly hardware, which remember back then PlayStation wasn't. The cell architecture that would go into the PS3 was, again, this is not an Xbox fanboy thing to say, it was tougher to work on than a PC architecture, which is what the 360 was. It was x86 based architecture. So they courted developers, they had good hardware that was easy to work on, and you remember the famous story of Epic Games going into a meeting with Microsoft about Gears of War. And they said, the guys at Epic said, well, we need more RAM in this if you want Gears of War, we need double the RAM. And Microsoft made the decision, even though it cost them a ton of money, they said, okay, yeah, we'll do it.
Wow.
And so that's, you know, they successfully courted the core gamer in the early 360 days. And then it was the second half of the generation where the Kinect came in.
Yes.
And Matrix came in and they went more for like, you know, Netflix was the 360 was like one of the first devices that you could watch Netflix on.
True. Yep.
And so that's when they started to go for more of the Like we've got the core gamer in the family. Now let's try and get the rest of the family.
Take over the living room.
Yeah, let's get the rest of the family. Yeah. And with the Xbox One, I mean, it's literally in the name. I mean, the one, the all-in-one.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to skip step one of getting, focusing on the core gamer first. And they just figured, we're going to get everybody. And Sony, to their great credit, they, and again, I'm sure there are going to be PlayStation fanboys that pick on this somehow, but I think it's generally fair to say that Sony, and I'm saying this as a compliment, ran the 360 playbook to perfection with the PS4. They went to an x86 based PC architecture for the console. They threw out Cell and their own stuff that was weird to work on. They went with a PC based architecture, powerful hardware. They courted a ton of developers. I don't know if you remember that original PS4 unveiling in February of 2013, which was like 2 months before the Xbox One unveiling was, when they had that like screen at the end where it was just this entire screen filled with tiny little developer logos because they'd gotten so many developers on board. Like they did everything that Microsoft had successfully done with the 360. And so, yeah, the Xbox One, they skipped the crucial step one and tried to just fast forward right to the all-in-one part. And so, yeah, that unveiling didn't go well. And then for people that might not remember, like I said, it was 10 years ago, like right about now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then like 2 or 3 weeks later at E3, yep, you still had, back when E3 was still alive and kicking, was the actual press conferences.
Yes, the media and briefing.
Microsoft went first. Sony went that night. I can't remember if it was what the schedule was back then, but Sony went later.
Whether yes,
it was
they did.
That night or the next morning. And I was in the crowd. I was in the building for the Xbox media briefing. And that might have been the last one I was actually at in person because again, I'm lucky I get to host all this IGN stuff, so I'm back at our studio. I can't be at the Microsoft thing in person. So, but that one I was there, and I was seated like stage, I can't remember what stage right or left, but like I'm on the side of the stage, right? And I'm more or less almost looking at straight on at the presenters. And I can see in the auditorium the big giant screen that had the teleprompter on it for all the speakers that were coming out. And like you and I were talking about before we went live here, like that showcase, that briefing was actually pretty good.
Ryan, let me hit you with a couple of games, please, right now, because I watched both of these last night.
Oh, you went back. Good for you.
Kicks off with Metal Gear Solid 5 with the gameplay trailer, right? Then we get Lost in Dark Souls 2 in there. Rise, Son of Rome. Killer Instinct is back. Sunset Overdrive is coming out with Ted Price. Forza Motorsport 5. You got Minecraft hitting Xbox
Motorsport. Two or one?
Motorsport
5. Sorry, yeah. I completely misheard. Go ahead.
And then you go down at the end, of course, you end with Witcher 3, Battlefield 4, and then they bring out Titanfall as the, hey, one more thing. It was a pretty solid hour conference.
As history has proven, that's a really, really impressive list of stuff.
Uh-huh. Black Tusk Studios as well as revealed, turns into Coalition. Right. That was a very interesting one.
The spy thing?
Remember? Yeah, I was just going to say,
game.
Ryan, if you watch it, it's like Black Tusk Studios. And you're like, okay. And then they show this like thing that looks like Splinter Cell almost, where the guy's on the side of a skyscraper. Yeah. And you're like, what is this? And then it's like, oh, okay, that's what they're doing. And then also Halo 5 with 343 with Chief with the hood that everybody remembers, the hooded Chief. So pretty solid lineup here, Ryan.
Yeah. And so that was all well and good until the end.
Yes.
So again, I would peek at the teleprompter just to see what was coming up because I can't help myself. I'm a journalist. That's what I do. I want to know what's going on. So because we were all waiting too for the release date and the price.
Okay.
You know, they'd unveiled the we didn't get either of those things at that May initial event that you know, the TV thing. So I was like, all right, but they'd made it clear that Kinect was going to be bundled. Like, all right, crucially at that moment in time, we did not know the price of the PS4. Okay. So that everybody kind of was wondering, is it going to be 4? Is it going to be 5? What are we looking at here? And, And so I'm sitting there, and it's winding down. Phil Spencer's on stage. It's the end. And I'm looking up, and I see the November 22nd release date. And then I see, because the teleprompter scrolls up, right? For those who have never seen a teleprompter before, it scrolls up. And then I was like in a slow motion car wreck. Or I just see $499.99, and I was just like, and then some like, no, and then he's waiting back for the words to come out of Phil's mouth. No, and he says four, and the air goes out of the room.
Yep,
gone, and it just ends on this horrifically sour note of just like, oh, $500. The 360 had been $399.
Yes,
and wildly successful, at least at launch. Obviously, it came down over time. And so it went over that poorly, even without knowing that Sony would shove they would shiv them shortly thereafter with $399 and just keep twisting with the whole how to trade games on, how to share games on PS4. So just, even without take any competitive context, any fanboy comparison out of it, the price was just a death blow to that conference. And obviously history would go on to show that was one of many horrible decisions that then when Phil Spencer, they kick Matrix ass out of there and Phil's installed as the head of Xbox in March of 2014, they unbundle the Kinect right away and basically forget about that thing as quick as they can, get the price of the box down to $399. It's still a little underpowered compared to the PS4, not drastically, but it turns into this whole 720p, 1080, 900p situation, and it's just, rest is history. But yeah, that was a memorable career moment of being in the theater and having a view, because not everybody in the auditorium can see the teleprompter, because it's just, there's certain seats that I happen to be in one of where you can see, and it was just like, oh no, don't say it, please.
Like you said, watching it, you can feel the air leave the room. There is a deafening silence, and then finally someone goes, whoo, and everybody starts to clap to just like get it moving. But there was a silence there of like, oh, that didn't go over well, everyone. That's too bad.
You're reminding me, the next time, I don't know if it'll be on the air or if this will have to be off, but the next time I see Phil, I got to ask him about that memory, like that moment for him on stage. Again, not to like torture him, but like it's been long enough that, I'd be curious how he would reflect back on that particular moment. I mean, we did talk kind of more generally about that on, I'm going to just quickly, shamelessly plug.
Get it in there,
one
Ryan.
Thing that's, it's really old. I'm not even, it's, but it's probably for Xbox fans. It's, I mean, honestly, like if I were to leave IGN tomorrow, which I'm not, but if I were to leave IGN or die tomorrow, the thing I would want at the top of my career achievements list was Podcast Unlocked episode 201. We tried to make it 200. It didn't work out, but it was from, I think it was 2015, and I managed to get, it took months of planning, and there's a lot of herding cats because executives with their schedules are impossible, but I had Phil Spencer, Peter Moore, and Seamus Blackley that I interviewed. That there we go.
Up on the screen Barrett, right now if you're watching.
It in.
Look at you, Ryan.
This is the best thing I've ever done in my career, and I honestly say that, I don't mean that to sound like egotistical. It's the thing I'm most proud of, because not only was just getting these three guys in the same room really tough, which, again, the audience doesn't care. That's not their problem. It's my problem. But the conversation that we had, like I had, you can see in front of me, pages of questions, pages. So I tried to get them for 2 hours. I think we ended up bargaining down to an hour and a half. But then they stayed, like, I think it ended up being like an hour and 45 minutes. And I was smart enough to just kind of tee these guys up and then stay out of the way and let them talk.
Yeah, I like that.
Because it was about them, not about me. And so, now I wish I'd asked that specific thing on that. So if you've never seen that, like, it's probably still entertaining now because, yeah, it's from 2014 or 2015 or whatever it was, but it's very historically based. So it's those three guys each reflecting on their era of Xbox. So Seamus Amazing. From the very beginning and inception, Peter Moore from those 360 glory days, and then Phil Spencer, who in that interview was also, he was really candid at that moment about, I think he said something like, that was it's been the toughest year of my career, you know, having to deal with the fallout of a really difficult Xbox One launch.
Yeah, that was, I remember watching that. I was a big fan back then. That was an amazing moment. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
You've done a lot of cool things as well. There's been a lot of incredible moments. I want to look back on the Xbox One, because when you talk about that May reveal, right, the first line, one of the first lines said is, for the first time, you and your TV are going to have a relationship. And I wrote, oh, no, you know, like, that's one of the first lines in this press conference that they put out there. But there is some bright spots, right? And that's what I want to highlight with you, because there's some interesting ones, right? Like, you talk about the Xbox Snap mode, which is almost like quick resume now, where they were snapping between TV, gameplay. Oh, somebody just sent me an invite. I'm snapping over to this game. It was a very interesting thing for them to show, and now all of us to love nowadays, right?
The problem was, because the Xbox One was just underpowered enough compared to the PS4, that they ended up, you know, they walked back so many of those multimedia TV features, because getting rid of the Snap unlocked, like, whatever it was, 5% of the RAM.
Wow.
Like, it was, at least that's how I remember it going, was they basically, because they were stripping the thing back after Phil took over, trying to sort of reposition it and refocus it as a games machine rather than an all-in-one TV device. But yeah, you're right, like, it's that was a cool idea. It was
Very cool.
Was a neat thing.
They had the Snap sidebar as well. You could picture-in-picture something. That big one was, of course, they signed that deal with the NFL for fantasy stats and having all that going on. Like, there's a lot of interesting things back then where it's like, oh man, nowadays I know gamers would love that idea if they still had the power and the idea to be able to do that.
And I remember Microsoft started an entertainment division where I went to a meeting for that with Microsoft, where they brought out, like, they'd hired, I forget her name, but it was a woman who'd been like the head of CBS.
Yes.
I apologize, I forget her name, but where, you know, they were going to create a bunch of original programming. As I recall, of course, the Halo TV
that
show
was where it was announced,
was the centerpiece of that. But there was going to be a Forza show. I'm pretty sure I'm remembering that correctly. And then a few other things were going to be in the mix as well. And yeah, I mean, again, if you were to have that now, you think, oh yeah, well, right, we have all these streaming services, and if that were part of your Xbox Live or Game Pass subscription, like, you had these original shows. Okay, yeah, I could see how that makes a lot of sense in the current climate, but the market just did not want that at that moment in time.
Yeah, it was so interesting to watch. And yeah, you think, man, that was such a time, right? When you had that and you first opened up the box, having to be able to plug in an HDMI from your cable box into that, the pass-through, right? Like, you don't see that anymore. That was, like you said, stripped away. That was gone real quick. And so, yeah, it was so interesting when I looked at that. And then, like we talked about, 3 weeks later, here we come with the games, and you've already had a bad taste in your mouth from that. Always Online was a big debacle that they had to figure out.
Yeah, the 24-hour check-in.
That was crazy, right, Ryan? That was a wild situation.
Did not go over well.
No, and then, of course, game sharing and it being locked to your account, but your friend can't play that. But, well, no,
Nancy
Tellum,
DG Mayer. Sorry, real quick, in chat. Thank you, DG Mayer. Nancy Tellum was the name of that CBS executive.
That was her name, is right. Oh, yeah. Also, another interesting one, on that Xbox E3, Games with Gold was announced. That was the opening of Games with Gold, which is wild to think about with Halo and Assassin's Creed. And it's like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Now we kind of take for granted Games with Gold. I know all of our podcasts are kind of burnt out with that. And it's like this weird blend of,
why,
like,
are we still doing,
are we
this
done kind of with
thing.
This? Yeah, are we doing just Game Pass? Where do we fall, you know? But that was interesting to be like, oh, that was a moment as well. We're going to give you free games with your subscription.
What's really interesting is, again, when you look back with the 2020 hindsight, the first party games actually weren't the problem in the first year or so of the Xbox One. Quantum Break. Rise was like getting sixes and sevens, but a lot of people Really, I love that. Like, I would really enjoy that. Great story, by the way. The story was excellent. Like, I agree that it was a 6 or a 7, but that was seemingly like something they could have built off of. But yeah, you had
Dead Rising 3,
Dead
I believe,
Rising
was in that window as well.
Was a day one launch title. You know, you had Twisted Pixel had their Loco Cycle was the worst game they ever did, but that was like a talented studio that they had in their purview. You know, you had Halo coming down the pipe. My Master Chief Collection was in those. You know, it was broken, but like there was at first. So there was actually a lot. And then Sunset Overdrive being, again, you ask me, I've said this on my show, I'm going to say it on yours. If you ask me what's the greatest Xbox One game of all time, the answer is Sunset Overdrive for me. I think it's the best game the system ever had. I know there were great third-party games, and if you want to just say it's the best exclusive, whatever, but it holds up, and it was great at the time. It just, unfortunately, was the victim of being on the Xbox at the worst possible time. Like when Xbox was at its like lowest moment. Here's Sunset Overdrive. Like, oh, well, nobody cares about this platform right now, so nobody is going to play this amazing game from Insomniac.
So
which,
good.
If you play it, you absolutely see the foundational elements of what became Spider-Man.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I don't think Insomniac would argue that. Like, anyway.
Yeah, I like that. Another one, an interesting one I wrote down about Sunset Overdrive. Co-op, with the question mark I put, because I played that single player, but they promoted it like, oh, you can play this co-op. I was like, man, I didn't even know it was co-op back then.
Yeah,
it was so interesting. Yeah, you see it, a couple guys jump on screen. You're like, oh, man, I don't remember that being co-op. But it's fun. You bring up Sunset Overdrive. For me, it's Titanfall.
That's fair.
Titanfall on that Xbox One, that defined a generation. That was first-person shooter. Hey, let's get away from Call of Duty. Let's give you a little taste of something different, right? And, of course, we all know what happened with Titanfall 2, placed in the wrong situation between two games and just gets sandwiched.
But even, that remains one of the biggest crimes ever in gaming. And I know EA and Vince Zampella, who I adore Vince, I know him pretty well, has said, like, no, we did that. Something went on there. Like, that, there's just no way. Something behind the scenes, like, there must have been some politics behind that.
That's Ryan.
But
Call of Duty into Titanfall 2 and then Battlefield, that was an insane combo, which is awesome to see. We just recently had a big three with Halo Infinite, Battlefield, and Call of Duty just last year or 2 years ago. So it was just wild to be like, man, this Titanfall 1 was incredible. Yeah. Now we're sandwiching it.
But even Titanfall 1, kind of like Titanfall was even kind of kneecapped a little bit by the negativity around the Xbox platform. Yeah, I completely agree that that is a killer exclusive that came like 4 months after the system came out. It was right in the launch window. So it was right there. But, you know, you've got the negativity around the platform and that it also suffered perception wise, if nothing else, for not having a proper single player.
Multiplayer only.
Like, nowadays, that's more accepted where you can just, you know, it's like you'd put it out as free to play now and monetize it differently. But yeah, like Titanfall 1 definitely suffered from not having that single player campaign. Like Evolve did too.
Remember that? Evolve, with Turtle Rock. Yeah,
that was just not a thing that, again, the market didn't want that at that moment in time, at least not for $60.
No.
You know, now with free to play and different revenue models, you can do it. But yeah, like if the Xbox had gotten off to the Xbox One had gotten off to a more successful start, maybe we would have gotten a Titanfall 3 by now because the brand would have taken off more. I mean, one of my fondest, I'm the previews guy at IGN, so anything that hasn't come out yet, that coverage runs up through me. Either I'm playing it and covering it myself, or I'm assigning that out, whatever it is. But it all runs up through me, and probably my second favorite memory of playing something early in a preview setting is Titanfall 1.
Wow.
It was at Gamescom of 2013, you know, the year of the Xbox. That was the first time they were offering hands-on for Titanfall, And I just remember you had to make an appointment because they're booked wall to wall. So we go in for our appointment, and you know, these are Vince Zampella, Jason West, and basically the Infinity Ward team who've all, you know, come over to EA and started Respawn. And so just that game was so dialed in from the jump. And, you know, you hear like stand by for Titanfall and the hairs on my arm go up.
Yep.
And it was just this pure joy of a multiplayer game that I think I had to sweet talk the PR team. I'll give him a shout out. Devin Bennett was the PR guy at EA back then. Like, I had to try and sneak back in as many times as I could to play it again and again. It was that good.
That's
and
amazing.
By the way, the number one memory is similar. It's the first time playing Halo 2 multiplayer. Zanzibar, single flag, CTF.
So cool.
E3 2004, yep. Behind closed doors, same thing. They're booked wall to wall. We had our appointment, and then it's just like begging the PR people, did anybody not show up? Can I jump in? And I think I did get a couple more rounds, and that's the all-timer of, you know, you knew instantaneously that Halo 2 was very, very, very special. Oh. But Titanfall had the same vibe. Like, this is a legit thing that we're...
That's amazing, this is Ryan. Happening right That's now. Really cool. You know, I have not gone to many conventions, right? I've been thankful enough. In 2019, I spent every dollar I had with me and my friends from Tahoe. I was like, we're going to go to these. So we went to E3, PAX West, and RTX, and I got to see you at E3 for a brief moment. But up at PAX West, my only time where I begged to be back in the booth was with Illphonic and Predator. And I looked at them. I think Gio Corsi was there at the time. I was like, Gio, let me just hunt as the Predator nonstop. And they all giggled, and I begged them, let me just keep running through this. I had so much fun. And that was a cool convention moment. Yeah. I'll never forget.
Heck yeah.
Want to circle, I guess I'm circling back to Forza again one more time. The announcement of Drivatars in Forza Motorsport 5, that was an awesome one in 2013. Hey, we're using the cloud. We're gathering your data. We're also like putting in how you race, and we're going to make a driver for you that's going to be racing all the time against your friends in cars you've never driven in before. The Drivatars, that's a word in the gaming world that you will always remember.
Oh, yeah. And I loved getting tweets and emails from Unlocked listeners who'd be like, your Drivatar just ran me off the road. I'm like, yes, it did. Good job, me.
Yeah.
Good job, virtual me. Forza... You know, not only Drivatars that Forza gets credit for, Turn 10, but also I'm almost positive that Forza, I think it was Motorsport 4, invented the rewind too. Like if you cool. screwed up a turn, you know, just hold that Y button and rewind and go back. Like that's another thing we take for granted now too. An incredible franchise. I hadn't thought about this till recently, the rap I was giving you earlier about 12 games across two teams and near perfection every time. It's unreal. Like Final Fantasy doesn't have that good of a track record. And Final Fantasy, again, I'm not trying to knock it. It's a great, revered, beloved series, but they're not all 9 out of 10s or higher. 12 Forzas across Motorsport and Horizon. And you're talking about two development teams that have never missed across the span of, I guess it's almost 20 years, because Forza Motorsport 1 was 05, I think. Maybe Barrett can fact check me.
Impressive.
So we're talking about like upwards of 20 years, 12 games, insane track record. And that's why like I'm happy for Turn 10 to be taking their time. I'm glad they're rebooting it for next gen only. We're going to take full advantage of the Series X, and I can't wait to see what those guys deliver. And I think it's going to be October or November. Like I would be willing to make my classic In-N-Out lunch bet.
I like that.
That it's going to come out this fall.
Okay. I like
May 3rd, 2005 was Forza.
Ryan's right on it. Great stuff, Ryan. All right. Well, I only have a little bit of time left with you today on the podcast, and I thought we'd do some rapid fire fun questions.
Let's do it.
And so we got some really good ones here. Best friend Luke Gage writes in and says, hey, Ryan, gives you some really nice pleasantries about you and the podcast, but he writes...
You're skipping over those? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
He writes, I heard your discussion on last week's Unlocked about how Fable, of currently announced Xbox IP, is the IP that has the best chance of igniting major swath of gamers and potentially acting as a major pillar for Xbox. I'm thinking the type of IP that gets included on a Twitter image and announced in the upcoming game showcase as the Series X packaging. He wants to know, what are some of the faces that you think 10 years from now will be on the back of an Xbox package? Is it still Chief, or could it be something else?
I'd be surprised if Chief wasn't still on there. I mean, I know Halo's in a weird place right now. Like, Infinite's moving on. Season 4 is coming. Infection coming to Halo Infinite. That's cool. It's the single-player future, the campaign future of Halo that's really up in the air because is... I mean, they're going to have to do some more hiring at Turn 10, 343, only because, again, I don't say that disrespectfully to anybody that's still there, but a lot of senior people on the Infinite campaign team left. Like, Paul Crocker left. I mean, there's Joseph Staten, obviously, as a director. So there will need to be some, and maybe they will elevate the existing talent and give them a shot at those senior roles, those leadership roles, and maybe we'll have a situation like what the next generation of id Software developers after Carmack and Romero and all those people left, and the Hugo Martin era, and the, you know, that team reinvented Doom, modernized it for the new generation, and turned it into this awesome thing that's not just this classic first-person shooter, but it's a relevant modern thing. So maybe that's what's going to happen at 343, with where the talent will sort of rise from within. Maybe they'll go spend some money and bring in some outside talent. I don't know, but I do hope that, I certainly hope that and expect that Chief's still going to be featured prominently. But certainly, I hope Starfield is one of those games. Now,
okay.
The interesting thing about Starfield, just real quick, and I'll get back to naming a few others. But if Starfield is a gargantuan hit, if it is that 11 out of 10 that you were talking about with Phil Spencer, that hypothetical scenario that we would all love to see, that it's that good, there isn't going to be a Starfield 2 for a long, long time, because in an interview with me last summer, it kind of weirdly went viral, I think mostly because Todd didn't talk to anyone else, and he just happened, I didn't even know, he's like, hey, Todd, can we just chat on air? And he was like, sure. And then it turned out like, oh, he didn't talk to anybody else. So that worked out well for me. But he straight up said, you know, Elder Scrolls 6 is in pre-production. It's their next game. And he said Fallout 5 is after that. So if Starfield is huge, if it's a 10 out of 10 game of the year winning masterpiece, there isn't going to be a Starfield 2 until I'm like nearing the end of my career. I'm 42 years old, so it's going to be a while. unless they either build a new internal team, because currently, as far as I know, it's still, not that the team hasn't gotten bigger, but I believe it is just the one Bethesda Game Studios team that Todd Howard is in charge of. They don't have like four teams going on in there to do like Fallout, to do Elder. It's, I believe, I can't say that with 100% accuracy. That's always how it used to be, which is why they alternated. But like, we went from Fallout 3 to Skyrim to Fallout 4 and now Starfield, because there aren't multiple teams there. So unless they do build another team within Bethesda Game Studios, or they bring in someone else from the Xbox family, whether it's, I mean, Obsidian's pretty busy with a, but
they got a lot going on, Ryan.
But they, you know, there's been that relationship, Fallout New Vegas, like, you know, that's the first natural place. I mean, InXile is in the building too, in terms of the Xbox family. So yeah, unless either they build a second team or they get some help from one of the other Xbox game studios, Starfield is it for Starfield for quite a long time, which is weird for a game that like could be this huge, big new hit. But so yeah, as other stuff that could be on the back of the the Xbox box, Avowed has that potential, I think.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you're talking about a team in Obsidian who they just made a 10 out of 10 game in Pentiment. Small team, you know, little passion project from Josh Sawyer and like 15 or 20 folks there, and deserving of the 10 out of 10. But in terms of their like full team efforts, you're talking about a team that weirdly over the years has always been, do we curse here?
You can curse.
That has always been kind of fucked over in some way or another. Like, Lucas, they did Knights of the Old Republic 2, and Lucas went, oh, we need this out for the holidays, so ship it. And if you remember, you know, there's a ton of bugs in that game when it launched, and the ending they kind of had to just like throw together an ending, and the modding community, because all the files were like there, and the modding community has like gone back and kind of fixed that game, the ending of that game. So they had that happen to them. They had the South Park, The Stick of Truth, which is, by the way, one of my favorite role-playing games ever. Possibly the hardest I've ever laughed at a video game in my entire life. There are so many sequences in South Park, The Stick of Truth that are actually laugh-out-loud hilarious. Like, that is no hyperbole. That, you know, if you've played it,
they
like,
nailed
you know what
it.
I'm talking
they
about.
Nailed it. Oh,
just,
yeah.
Like, where you're, like, I can't. I'm just going to start... No, I'll go down that road and just start recounting hilarious, not safe for work things from that game. But even that game, like, it changed from, like, THQ, like, kind of goes under in the middle of the development, and they end up having to go over to Ubisoft, and then they kind of get, like, edged out on the sequel, and Ubisoft, like, they did a good job. The Fractured Butthole was a good game, but it wasn't Obsidian. I don't think it was as good as Stick of Truth. You had the original IP they did with Sega that I think I reviewed it for OXM. Oh shit. Well, Alpha Protocol.
Oh,
which
okay.
was again like needed more time in the oven. Josh Sawyer was making an Aliens RPG that like got killed. We should have had that game. So my point is that Obsidian has kind of been like dicked around a lot. And now that they're with Microsoft, they have the freedom and the budget to go wild. And Avowed is going to be our first, like, that's going to be the first example of that. Because, again, no disrespect to Pentiment. That was, like, already in a smaller thing they were already working on. I mean,
Outer Worlds.
Thank you, Outer Worlds. Mm-hmm. Two Worlds was
a
European RPG like from way the hell back.
They got a second game.
Yeah, Outer Worlds was, again, that was done under Private Division, a 2K label, before the acquisition. So, yeah, like, this is an extraordinarily long-winded way of saying that Obsidian, we are finally going to see them without any guardrails on them, without anything messing with them. And I think Avowed could be exactly what we need to tide us over till Elder Scrolls 6, because we're looking at probably 5 years for Elder Scrolls 6.
Like, back.
2028 would be, because you're talking about, even though they're already in pre-production on it, they'll have their technology base from Starfield, but it takes longer and longer to build these mega games, especially the kind of games that Bethesda Game Studios and Todd Howard build. The timelines are getting longer, not shorter. I mean, I don't think it's going to be 8 years, which is what Starfield has been, but I don't think it's going to be turned around in like half that, which would be 4 years. I think we're looking at 5 years for Elder Scrolls. So Master Chief's on the box, Starfield's on the box, Fable's got a great chance in Playground's hands to be on the box, Avowed's got a chance to be on the box. There's a lot of reason to be optimistic and excited.
Definitely.
We're just sick of waiting.
Which, again,
it's no disrespect to the developers working hard on this stuff. It's just the unfortunate way that the chips have fallen. You know, whether you want to hold Phil accountable, Matt Booty accountable, like whatever, however you want to kind of shake it out. It's just, it's been, And Phil took responsibility
on your podcast. Very impressive, yeah.
But being an Xbox fan has been like being a Chicago Cubs fan pre-2016.
Yes.
Wait till next year. Wait, and then you just hear that every year until now. We're waiting for our 2016, our World Series winning season, which I think it might finally be coming up.
Could Redfall be looked back, since we're given sports analogies, will Redfall be looked back on when the guy caught the ball in the outfield?
Oh, and everybody... the Steve Bartman play?
Yes.
Redfall
be the Bartman for we all look back on?
Where they would have made it if yes. that, no. If that, maybe.
It might be one
maybe.
Day.
Maybe.
You know?
I mean, yeah, if Starfield is that the home run that we all want it to be, then yeah, we could have had Hi-Fi Rush into Redfall, into Starfield, into Forza Motorsport, into Hellblade, into Avowed, and so on and so forth.
Could be the moment. It's right. Yeah.
Redfall maybe is Steve Bartman here.
I have two final ones for you to be respectful of your time. Really quick. Indiana Jones or Perfect Dark for your personal preference?
Excited for both, but I gotta go with Indy. Even though, like, we have to acknowledge for any Xbox like hardcore guys that really care about exclusives, which again, you're well and good to do so. We have to mentally prepare ourselves for the possibility that Indiana Jones might not be exclusive.
Mm, okay.
Because that was a deal signed with Lucasfilm prior to I think the timeline we don't actually know, but that may have come prior to that was announced. Anyway, there's a decent chance that that might end up being a deal that was signed to be a multi-platform game back before Bethesda was owned by Microsoft.
That felt right. That felt like that was happening right as the ink was drying on that deal, right?
So again, that's not to it still doesn't change the fact that I'm super psyched for what I mean. You're talking Machine Games, who again also has never missed. Smaller sample size overall than a Turn 10 or a Playground, but you've got a team of people that have made some excellent Wolfenstein games, a couple of them plus an expansion, a great expansion or two, and the core of that team was born out of Starbreeze and the Chronicles of Riddick: Escape from Butcher Bay, and then the very excellent sort of standalone expansion follow-up Riddick Assault on Dark Athena. So, yeah, Mike, you might be a little bit young Butcher Bay.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
One of, I would probably, that if that's not a top five original Xbox game of all time, it's absolutely top 10.
Really? Okay.
Go, like, look it up.
Yeah.
Check out, maybe, like, just watch a video or two of it. It was a first-person, but mostly stealth game. It did have some guns in it, but you were Riddick breaking out of a prison. And it was one of the best looking original Xbox games. The technology was insane, but the gameplay backed it up. It was, you know, you were creeping around in the dark because you know you've got the eye shine thing from that Riddick's got, and it's that game.
Okay, you got me some homework.
I'm waiting for
some
chat. Yeah, here we go. Madeline Stanley saying my husband loved the Riddick games. Yeah, So. Machine Games has a track record.
They got a great track record, yep.
But they've always worked in first person. Going back to Riddick, they've never done a third person game. And so we're looking at one of two scenarios for Indiana Jones. Either it's a first person Indiana Jones game, which I think is less likely, but I think would be really cool to see. Like, right? Wouldn't like a going first person for Indy like
whip on one hand, pistol on the other hand?
Like,
yeah,
that would be a really interesting take. Or it's Machine Games breaking out of their comfort zone a little bit and doing a third person Indiana Jones game. And it's almost certain to be. Oh, here's some. See, Barrett's got some Riddick footage up. It's tough to just watch, especially even this you can tell like. If you try to transport yourself back a little bit in time, like this was one of the best looking games you'd ever seen in your life.
Wow.
To this point.
All right. I'm going to take that homework assignment from you. Check it out.
You could throw bodies, which was fun back then. And it's highly likely that Indiana Jones is being built on id Tech, because that's what Machine Games has mm-hmm. worked with ever since they were acquired by Bethesda. So we know that engine runs like butter.
Yeah.
They've already tuned it for next gen. We got a Doom Eternal next gen update, next gen patch. So id Tech, it's id Tech 666 is what we're up to now. Id Tech is optimized. It runs great. It looks great. I mean, Doom Eternal still looks awesome even 3 years later. So yeah, Perfect Dark, I would love to see it, but after, you know, hearing all the reports of the development turmoil going on at the team over there, again, we don't know if that's totally accurate or not, but what we do know is we've never seen that video game other than a conceptual cinematic trailer from two and a half years ago. So
quite some time.
I'll be excited when the time comes, but for now, yeah, I'm choosing indie.
I like that choice. Well, I'm going to leave you with this, Ryan, because I know you're a big Inside guy. You like Limbo. You love these games. And I know you said you haven't got enough time yet with Planet of Lana.
Correct.
But, of course, I did our kind of funny review over on the Games Daily when that did release. That went up on Monday. I was able to talk about that.
What'd you think
of it? I gave it a 4 out of 5. A great game.
Yeah.
Ryan, I was blown away. It's not my kind of cup of tea, my style, but I've played Inside Limbo. And throughout the whole experience, the visuals, unbelievable. The soundtrack is
also
so
wintry on that
good.
Soundtrack, right?
It's amazing, right? And so the coolest part about this is all I was playing it, I was thinking, man, this is knocking at the door of one of these indie titles that will be talked about for a long, long time.
It's
that good, Ryan.
I believe you, and I want to play the heck out of it. It's in a tough spot in terms of, you know, it doesn't have a big multi-million dollar marketing budget. All it has is basically the
word of mouth of
folks like us, where, you know, it's sitting here, like, people are playing Zelda right now. They're playing Star Wars Jedi Survivor. They're about to lace them up in Diablo.
Yeah.
They're, you know, if you've got a PlayStation 5, you're chomping at the bit for Final Fantasy 16. So it's tough. Like, I did Unlocked, but right before coming over here, we ended up recording on Tuesday randomly this week. We normally do Wednesday, but I was kind of similarly talking about Star Trek Resurgence. Also out this week, IGN gave it a 7 out of 10, but it's ex-Telltale developers. And it is a very good Telltale Star Trek game, just not by Telltale, from former Telltale folks. That, yeah, it's like, it's just a tough time where it's going to be tough to even just get anybody to like even look at it, let alone go ahead and spend money on it, because you're trying to get your money's worth out of these other, you know, 20, 30, 100 hour like blockbuster games that we're all in the middle of right now. So yeah, I'm so glad to hear that you really liked Planet of Lana.
I'll give the quick sales pitch to everybody out there. 4 to 6 hour experience, so it's not going to take up a bunch of your night.
As a dad, this makes me very
might happy. Be able to knock it out one night, maybe you sparse it out to two, but truly, I beat it in about 4.5 hours.
Yep.
Like I said, get it on the biggest TV, enjoy these visuals, get the headphones, crank them up to 11, because the music rivals moments of Star Wars with that composing. When you're playing Marvel movies, you're like, wow, music's kicking, it's that good type situation. And so I was really impressed with playing Alana. On Game Pass for console and PC, another big win for friends.
Yeah.
So I hope you all check that out. I wanted to pass that one on to you since you gave me a little homework. I'll check out Riddick so I can talk about it on next week's podcast.
You're gonna DM me and you're gonna be like, oh my God, you are so right about this. How did I ever not play this?
That's awesome, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining me on this week's Kinda Funny XCast. It is a special moment for me because you have been such a role model and mentor to me, and I've looked up to you for a long time. So thank you, Ryan, for being on the podcast.
I appreciate you having me. You're very kind.
Thanks, homie.
You're doing excellent work over here. I'm so glad that that monster Greg Miller, that fanboy, that PlayStation fanboy Greg Miller, finally said, all right, let's hear from the other side. Uh-huh. Let's get the Xbox guy. No, I love Greg. I adore everybody here. I know almost everybody here in some way, shape, or form from over the years. And you know, you and I are newer friends.
Yes.
But it's been great. And I'm just grateful for you to have me on. And You're doing good stuff here, my
Thanks,
friend.
Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that. Stuff. Next time, my gaming dads will be back with you. Greg will take us all out to In-N-Out because I know he's jazzed up about that.
3x3, plain, well-done fries.
Well-done fries.
That's the move. That's my order.
Answer, Ryan.
Yes, that's my order.
I don't know what I saw. It must have been a TikTok. Maybe it was you getting into my mind. The last two times I've gone to In-N-Out, well-done fries, best fries I've ever had from them. Best fries.
Again, I know the In-N-Out fries get hated on, and I don't. I respect that. I don't disagree necessarily. They're not the best fries. You get them well done, it does take them up a level.
That's
the way to go.
Impressive stuff.
There's cheese fry people out there. There's animal style fry people out there. For me, just give them to me well done, and I'm happier.
Triple plain. I remember that.
3x3. All secret menu. Both on both fronts.
I like that. Well, Kind of Funny Best Friends, we'll be back next week with one Andrea Renee to round out a nice 3-week experience of all guests. So thank you all so much for joining us. We'll catch you back here next week. Have a good one, gamers. Peace.